Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Dr. John live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the cold sun and fun capital of the world today, but it's still beautiful. We love Myrtle Beach, and emanating from here is Scarycast. This is our Tuesday night broadcast, co-hosted by me and Matt Delph and Kyler Smith. And Matt Delph, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Ready for the show.
Well, I am too, and you always, you know, when I ask you, you always bring incredible guests. I spoke with our guest in the green room, and she is really cool. So without any further ado, I want to introduce Casey Miller to all the Scarycasters. How you doing tonight, Casey?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
We are so glad you're here. Matt's told me some really cool stuff about you, so I'm going to put you just slightly on the spot and tell us how you met Matt, and then tell us about what you do, because you're involved. You're a Bigfoot experiencer and what I call a paranormalist. That's what I am. And so tell us a little bit about how you met Matt, and then how you do and what you do.
All right. Well, I started networking on Facebook, I don't know, about maybe 2 years ago. I had been really interested in connecting with other people that had had experiences like myself with the Sasquatch people, and I never really thought to look around on Facebook at groups or anything. I wasn't really there. But once I did, I started meeting other researchers. I think it really happened after I went to my first Beachfoot. So I met a few people, and then I became Facebook friends with so-and-so, and then from on there just turned into a little bit of a networking. And I believe I met Matt through there. He might tell you something different, like I, you know, slid in his DMs or something. I'm just kidding.
So he just said that you two guys met and you were up for grabs on a show. It didn't exactly work out, but that he thought you were really nice, and he stayed in touch with you. And Matt said he was hoping that the two of you could do some research together.
Yeah, that's exactly. So it's the show alone. I was solicited for the show. I received an email. It came directly to my Facebook messages, and for season 10 of Alone, a woman who's a casting director, she messaged me and told me that she would be interested in speaking to me. So, and then I told Matt about it, and he was like, me too. So I really have been wanting to get out there and get together with Matt and do some research, because I see some of the stuff he's doing. And I really admire getting out there in the wilderness, getting your hands dirty, and doing the work.
Well, that's great. And I think that's very, very important, because Matt is the first person. 7 years ago, he introduced me to the term boots on the ground. And that means a variety of things. It means you're out there tromping around in the woods trying to do what you do. but it also means you're exploring. It means just, you know, there are lots of great things that have to do with boots on the ground, like, you know, researching, talking to people, going to places. And I think boots on the ground is, for sure, a not well-recognized term like it should be. Matt, do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's where you get your most experience. I mean,
well,
just being outdoors.
Well, I think it also, like, sorry about that. I think it separates the people
ahead.
That are kind of just doing their book work as opposed to actually being out in the field and having these experiences.
True. I mean, I agree. And now I'll tell you one thing, you know, Matt is out there in the field. I've got his story, the Indiana Bigfoot sighting of Matthew Delph. That is in Look Up in the Sky, third edition, first, second, third edition. We're going into the fourth edition when we hit the Frogman Festival in Cincinnati, Ohio on March 4th. So, you know, Matt's got a great story. It's a compelling story. And I've got in Look Up in the Sky, I've got four or five stories. Just can't really tell them all. I don't want to hog the space for some, you know, maybe some stories that a lot of people have already heard. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. I mean, and don't you agree, Casey? I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think Bigfoot and paranormal research is about the most fun you can have.
I would agree with that. Actually, to be perfectly frank, though, sometimes it can be a little scary, especially I like to be alone a lot, and I spend a lot of time in the backcountry by myself. So I have this little vehicle that I have a little rack on it, and it can go, you know, I like to be away from everybody. I am a forager, so I spend a lot of my time looking for, you know, herbs and roots, mushrooms and whatnot, which has really led me to a lot of the experiences that I've had because I like to get away from everybody and I like to be alone. So sometimes if I'm hanging out by myself, it can be a little bit frightening to have, you know, wake up to 2.5 inch thumbprints on your vehicle or little structures built against a tree, you know, 50 yards from where you're sleeping, or the many experiences that I've had. I'm like looking around. I know I'm okay. I've always been okay and I've always been safe, but sometimes my mind wanders and it can be a little bit frightening, but it's very exhilarating. It makes me feel really good when I find these, you know, amazing, beautiful footprints in the snow or in the mud and just right there for me to see some beautiful little structure that's made or fingerprints all over my car. It's really cool. But yeah, it can be very rewarding feeling. It can be very scary feeling. I guess it depends on the situation.
And maybe a word that could come into play is terrifying.
Could be terrifying, yes.
Yeah,
I
really
think I've grown. So I used to not even that long ago, I really wasn't open to hearing about what people call the woo. I really wasn't interested in talking about it. I really didn't know if I believed in any of that stuff, even though I've had spirit communication since I was a child. The Sasquatch woo thing was like, I don't know about that. But really recently, a year and a half ago or so, I started having these dreams of a particular individual. His name is Daru, which I've learned over this time. But he started coming to me in my dreams, which is where I have most of my spirit communication. So he introduced himself to me sort of just by being up in a tree, and he got my attention. Like, I was in a dream and I was at the river fishing, which is something I would normally be doing. And I heard this really loud crack And I looked, and he's sitting up in a tree looking right in my eyes. And it was so intense how real it felt. And he jumped out of this tree. He climbed down a little ways and then jumped down and walked away from me. And then it wasn't but a couple of weeks later that I met him again. And I wrote it down. I journal most of these experiences. And I was like, well, I understand that I talk about the subject a lot, but to have the exact same individual come into my dreams the second time, I started opening my mind a little bit more to the idea of, okay, these individuals have this connective power to manipulate whatever energies around me to communicate with me when I'm sleeping. Call it psychic or whatever. I mean, people have so many different ideas. I feel like I move through doors and go through a different time and space when I close my eyes at night to go to sleep.
Well, I believe you're right. And I wanted to make a comment. If you won't mind, and if Matt won't mind, I find the term woo extremely offensive and unlearned and unknowledgeable. It is like nothing. It's almost like a nothing term. Because I have developed, you know, when I got my doctorate from North Carolina State, I was taught to do everything scientifically, which means you explore, you record, you do, you know, there are ways to do research. And when people talk about woo, I mean, sometimes I have gotten a bit unglued because I tell them, frankly, they're stupid. It is not a word. It has no notion of scientific research. Because I think what Matt does with his boots on the ground, with what you're doing, you see, when you are recording experiences, you are doing scientific research. And it's like, don't give me a non-scientific term for what you are doing and what Matt's doing and what I'm doing. I mean, you know, it just, I'm sorry, the old Burke County boys coming out pisses me off. You okay? You okay with that, Casey?
You know what, not only do I agree with you, but I'm actually starting to get to the point in my life and in my experiences with these highly evolved, highly emotional, highly intelligent people that I don't even want to call them Bigfoot. Like Sasquatch people is something that I'm kind of just kind of trying to stick to. Sometimes I'll say things like woo or Bigfoot just because so people understand, but I'm trying to move away from this term, you know, because I think people like me and people like Matt and people like you coming together and having these conversations is going to help open some doors for people to be more understanding of these experiences. I mean, like I said before, I really wasn't open to the idea until it started happening to me. Maybe that's why it did start happening to me, but you know, I don't think that really, but, you know, you never know. We don't know a whole lot about this. When we start having experiences is when we can sort of start, like I said, recording, observing, and boots on the ground, get out there and have these experiences and try to figure it out a little bit. Every time I think I know something new, I get smashed down. And it's like, no, you really didn't know anything. Here's something new.
And now, Casey, I want to stop you. You said two of the most important things in research. You said record and observe. That is what scientific research is about. And that's what we do. I mean, we simply write down what happened and we go forward. Correct?
I think you're right. I mean, what else can we do? Write it down, observe. Yeah, exactly.
Collecting data is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Collecting data. And the thing of it is, though, they call it, oh, that can't be. But you can prove this stuff, this telepathic speaking or stuff like that. You can prove it in science. It's right there in science. So why they refuse to acknowledge some of this stuff is what baffles me. They're like, oh, well, that can't. You know, it's like, well, wait a second, hang on. If you're a scientist, then you know scientifically that has been proven. It's It's possible and it happens. So why are they just wanting to throw that out? They have an agenda.
Well, Matt, maybe they have an agenda, or maybe they're not smart enough to understand what they need to be doing. And I've come across too many people that call themselves scientists that have PhDs from mediocre universities, like, you know, and I don't want to pick one out, but I will, Iowa State University, you know, whatever. I mean, just very, you know, very much garden variety universities, and they just don't understand what research is about. Now, I did. I got it beat over my head at North Carolina State, and I'd already, at the time I went there, I'd already published 30 articles. So, I mean, I had a good understanding of research. But, you know, people don't, they just don't get it. And they want to say, they want to tell you how wonderful they are. You know, they really do. I'm sorry, Matt. Please continue.
No, that's all right. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, that's how we get our boots on the ground. Okay, we're out there and you start experiencing these things. Okay, if you're tracking a set of tracks, and all of a sudden they stop in the middle of nowhere, and they just, there's no other, it's wild, because it'd be out in the middle of a meadow. It'll be out in the middle of the forest where no trees, nothing that they can climb up, but the tracks just stop in the middle of nowhere. I mean, okay, so how does that scientifically happen if they're walking and they're walking through the mud and all of a sudden the tracks just end? It's like they've had to go somewhere, you know? They're not standing there physically right there in front of us in the 3D. So,
One would think they have to go somewhere, right, Matt?
So that's the stuff you experience when you're out in the field and you're doing what I call, you know, the boots on the ground research. I love it.
Yeah, and I agree. I've seen some footprints where, you know, you only see one, and it's kind of like the last time I saw, well, I saw a full trackway in the snow, and I was really impressed by seeing the entire thing. And while I was looking at the footprints, and I have pictures of this, the entire trackway, because everybody likes to be like, where's all the other tracks? Well, this time I had a full trackway, and it was in the snow, and there was the only other tracks were deer tracks. So I'm going through, and I put my foot down inside one of these footprints, and it's pretty astounding, the difference. I use it as a cover photo for my group, but you know, there's another time where I found a foot track in the mud, and it was just by itself. It was a perfectly made footprint in the mud next to a muddy pond. I was up there almost 6,000 feet elevation, mushroom hunting around this swampy, it was like a muddy pond area in late September, early October. And I thought, who would be out here barefoot? This is what really started jump-starting my curiosity, was this print that I found. But I looked around and I thought, well, the substrate behind me was fairly dense, pine needles and stuff. And then the substrate in front of me was like, it was a pond. It was a muddy pond, but there was a big rock. Maybe, you know, the individual jumped from where they were at, made one print, and then jumped again. And then I thought, well, maybe jumped into a tree. There's so many different ideas or theories that I had at the time when I was just, I didn't know anything about Sasquatch people, or I was just starting to have these interesting experiences with these people. And so I came up with so many different variations because of each experience I had that was so different. I had a dream one night that I was laying in my bed. In my dream, I'm laying in bed, and there's, like, I look up, and instead of my artwork being there, it was covered in mud, like somebody painted mud all over my walls. And then I look over, and there's a small tree next to me, and there's this, on the tree there was a little ornament made out of wrapped up twigs or something. And then I'm looking around and I'm very curious. And then I look back and there's all these feathers stuck to the mud on the wall of my bedroom in the dream. And so then I wake up from that, and I'm like, that was very interesting. And then I wake up from that, and there is this really out-of-place feather in my bedroom. I found it when I was vacuuming, and I was like, where did that come from? And I thought about it more. And a friend of mine, I was with him, and he has most of the MindSpeak interactions. We were told through MindSpeak, he was told through the MindSpeak, I've been told things in dreams, but he's had physical confrontations, interactions where he's been actually told this, that we were at one point so many lifetimes ago, we were one soul that split into two and somehow came together in this lifetime. And ever since we have met and started talking about the Sasquatch stuff, we have had these dreams have been coming so quick and so fast. And now the interactions, like when I go camping in the area, I mean, we have had tactical flashlights explode in our hands. My audio recorder goes crazy. Sometimes I get like sounds in the audio recorder, like I have a clear whistle in my audio recorder during a conversation, and just things start going wild. So many different variations of contact, communication. And if we believe in these higher energies, because I believe that they have these huge circuit boards, so much more advanced than us, that sometimes it takes my energy really quickly and drains it because I have this little tiny circuit board compared to them. Not to get off track or anything, I get rambling, but it's kind of hard to, there's so many things to talk about, you know, in 1 hour.
Well, yeah, I mean, there really are tons of things to talk about. Yes, Matt?
I was going to say, I've had the same experience any time that I've had batteries go completely drained on flashlight, thermal equipment drained, be fully charged, and then all of a sudden it drained. And what was kind of neat was Stan Gordon was talking about a lot of research back in Fayette County in Pennsylvania. We had talked about a while back, but these people come across these Sasquatch in their cars would stall out the energy, like they would lose battery power or stuff like that. So these things are pulling energy somehow, some way. And that happens a lot. It happens a lot out in the field, especially with me and a lot of people I work with will notice that are all of a sudden all our equipment go dead. You know, fully charged, just zoom, it's gone. All the energy from it.
Yeah, and I think that these are such an intelligent people, like I said, and I'll say it over and over again, so intelligent and so emotionally involved. I think that as well when I go out in the forest, certain things happen to me, like where I feel like I'm kind of being spoon-fed before face-to-face meeting, if you will. Because I make it pretty well known. I do get a little jumpy sometimes, especially when I'm by myself. I used to carry a pistol all the time, and then I was like, you know, I just don't really feel that afraid. I've been in the wilderness my whole life, and I've been around a lot of wild animals, and these people being the apex predators in the forest, you know, I'm not going to be protected with some small pistol. So, you know, I kind of just have gotten so comfortable with being told that I'm protected and that I'm safe that I kind of go with it. But such an advanced species that we can't even understand. I can't put it into words. I'm sorry, I got a little off track there.
Well, they certainly are, as you would put it, they certainly are advanced. And they They know what they're doing. They can create stick structures. They can live out in the woods where we can't. We wouldn't know how to do it. So, I mean, Sasquatch, or as we call them down here, the forest people, they know what they're doing. And it's very interesting to watch them.
They're a higher dimension.
You know, yeah.
Higher consciousness.
I was hoping we would talk about dimensions, because this is something that I'm very new to having conversations about. You know, when I went to school, I studied in law enforcement. So I studied how to lift fingerprints, which I'm really grateful for, because when I found those fingerprints on my car, the first thing I thought about doing was lifting them and saving them, which I did. And every time something happens, it's in my nature to investigate the area, try to make sense of everything, write it down, observe further, you know. And I just can't really explain the dimensional stuff. It's like when I go to sleep and I start having dreams of, sometimes I know who it is, and I can be like, oh my gosh, hey, you know, and I know that they have passed over and they're trying to give me a message to give to somebody else, or it's very random and they don't speak to me and I can just see them. And sometimes I don't know who it is. I walk through different, I want to say portals, because that just seems like the appropriate word to use for what's happening, is I'm walking through a hallway. Here's a door. I open the door and I could be talking to a friend of mine that passed away 2 or 3 years ago. And then, okay, I'm in contact. Sometimes it's really hard to talk to people about this too, because people think it's insensitive to come to them and say, hey, you know, your loved one came to me and I feel like that there's a message to tell you, or at least tell you that I saw this person. And it could be misconstrued as insensitive. But for me, there are a few people in my life where it's clear that this individual that has visited me is grateful that I went and told their family member, hey, this is what I saw, because then the visits will repeat. So, and I don't think she'll mind if I say her name, because she posted on Facebook one day, but she's like telling me, because her son passed away a couple years ago and we went to elementary school together, but I didn't really know him as an adult, just a child, but I recognized him right away when I saw him in my dreams the first time. And it took me a while to tell her, but when the second dream happened, I was like, I think that I really need to tell her that her son is visiting me. So I started telling her, and then she was like, please keep telling me. And so now I think he's figured out that he can get messages relayed through me to his mother and his sister. So now it's kind of a regular occurrence when he comes and sees me when I'm sleeping. I call it drifting. I don't call it dreams. Usually I'm just doing that too on the radio, but I call it drifting because I don't think I'm just dreaming this up. I think that I'm walking through other dimensions. I'm in another space and time, and I'm having these conversations with these people. This is really happening. And I'm drifting, I call it. I've never really started having these conversations about dimensions until recently. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Absolutely. Can I tell a little story here?
Please, Matt.
Okay. It was a few months ago, something like that. Casey tells me, she's like, oh, I had a dream that you were in it. And me and you were riding away on these horses out in this field or away from someplace. Me and her were on these horses. And I was like, really? I was like, well, that's kind of funny. Which I've always had an obsession with the Old West, which is kind of, I don't know why. But I've never even ridden a horse before. That's kind of bad. I grew up on farms, stuff like that, but I've never ridden a horse. But we're riding away on this horse. Well, it was probably a couple weeks ago. A friend of mine sends me this picture of this old outlaw. And I think it was Harry Tracy. And he said, man, you look just like this guy. He said, it could have been you in a past life. I was like, what? No, I don't think I look like him or whatever. And it was weird because I go back and I do some research on this guy. And this guy's in the area, Washington and Oregon area, where he's killed all these people and stuff. And I thought that was pretty wild. So I was like, well, you know, nothing's coincidence. So she has this dream. We're riding away from something. And she said, what'd you say? You had like one of those bustle things or something that tied up in the front. So it was in the past. So it could have been a past life regression, something that has been brought up. She could have been a bad influence on me. That's why I killed all them people in that past life.
Now, listen to this. You want to hear something crazy? So this is what happens when I start talking about stuff and I put it out in the universe. Well, I was talking to my best friend, Donald, who is my counterpart, who is the one that we are the kin of these Sasquatch people who live in this one area where we both grew up. And my dad started having these experiences when I was a child on the property. I grew up very desolate and out in the rainforest. And my dad, I remember my dad telling me that he saw a man in a ghillie suit with night vision goggles on. And I said, what makes you think he had night vision goggles on? And he was like, because no man could walk in the dark like that. And he was huge. And I was like, okay, dad. Man in a ghillie suit. Okay. Well, this happened right over the hill from where Donald's from. So we always say when we put things in the universe, we get answers. So we had this conversation, Matt, the other night. Well, it was, I think, last week. I was over in Crescent City in the Redwood Forest. I had some really cool stuff happen to me while I was over there, by the way. We're having this conversation. I'm recounting this dream that I had because I'm like, I don't even know Matt in person. We haven't hung out and stuff, but this always happens to me, it seems like. I start having these conversations and all of a sudden, boom, here's your answer. I forgot to tell you that Donald called me, actually, and I have this conversation recorded because when he calls me, I have an audio recorder and we record these conversations. He told me that he pulled an orb that he called it a memory orb. And he pulled the memory orb out of a drift. And in the memory orb, he saw me and another female who were friends being abducted by these men on horseback. And he said it was, you know, an older time, obviously. And it sounded like 1800s style because it was, you know, there was no cars and stuff. It was horses. He said that he kind of described us being dressed and the time era of us being dressed and being abducted by these men on horseback. And so I was like, I started thinking about you again. And I was like, in the drifts that I had where you were there, we were escaping on horses. I was on my own horse. You were on your own horse, though. So I was like, where does that tie in? That's really interesting that we just had that conversation and then he had this dream, because they go back and forth like this a lot, where the information gets, it's so interesting how the information gets passed around. You know, like I have seen his grandfather in drift multiple times. And he just saw his grandfather for the first time since he's passed away 16 years ago after we started talking about it and his grandfather visited me. I think it's hard for the spirits to come through sometimes with people that, you know, have an emotional attachment to their passing over or some. I haven't figured it out, and I don't think I ever will, because every time I think I've got it figured out, something new comes along where I'm like, okay, well, you don't know shit. Pardon my language.
So it sounds like maybe I saved you from that, or it's hard to say.
It might be that you stirred up a memory that I might find answers to another time that, you know, just exactly. Part of a piece of a puzzle. You know, a puzzle takes time. You cannot put a puzzle together in just a moment. It takes time. And that's what I want to kind of really stress on if people have a gift and they're working with their gifts, you know, some people can really want it and be impatient. And then, you know, whoever is kind of controlling that is going to be like, patience, grasshopper, you know, it's kind of
right.
Like I said, though, the puzzle pieces, they start to come together and you figure them out if you think about it little by little, but almost never, very rarely do I come up with the answers of the experiences that I have right away. I just had a conversation recently and I looked at some photos of a young man that went missing 23 months ago. And my friend told me, hey, look, I'm being asked to do this. I might have to do that. And I can't give out details because it's an ongoing investigation. But within two nights, I saw the entire thing go down. And I didn't know exactly what was happening until the next day I wrote everything down. But I was seeing through somebody else's eyes. This man, I was inside of him, looking through his eyes, looking at his cell phone, having a conversation with this other man who was, you know, he was having drinks. He was starting to, he was a loudmouth and he had a raspy voice and tan leathery skin. And I just went on and on about what I saw. I drew a map. And then I didn't even really think about it. But when I told my friend about it, he goes, hello, you just watched somebody be buried. And I just had that conversation with you the other day. And I was like, oh. So then I started putting everything together because it was so like I said, I was seeing out of his eyes instead of seeing him with my eyes, if that makes any sense. So it's, for me, I'm still kind of trying to navigate these waters on being able to drift and have control instead of just having things be blurry here and stuff, just having more control about what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, maybe even asking questions, looking at certain objects, like, is this my time? My friend just told me recently, he said, look at their shoes. Like, see if you can get enough control and drift to look at their shoes, because then that'll tell you a lot about what time era you're in. I'm like, I can be present day, I could be in the future, or like when I was riding horses with Matt through an open field, I knew that my hair was really long and flying in the wind, and I had on this really long dress, and I was riding a horse with a quickness, like I knew exactly what I was doing, which I've only ridden a horse a few times because I ride a Harley and I like that better. I have more control over it than a horse.
Is that channeling? I'm not sure what the term is when you see through somebody else's eyes.
I have no idea. I just experience it. And then sometimes it takes me a while to figure out that that's what's happening. Like, I have to write it down. I have to maybe think about it.
Well, I think, this is Dr. John, I think the term channeling does describe it. It's like channeling is getting visions from other sources. That's kind of the most general definition that we have at the Ryan Institute. So I would say that, you know, that, you know, if you really needed to have a definition, that's okay.
Yeah, I just started making up my own words, like drifting.
Casey, there's nothing wrong with the word drifting, because that gives us the sense of a consciousness moving kind of at its own pace, in its own direction, and picking up different things. So did I maybe get the right kind of sense of what you were talking about?
Yeah, and when you said channeling, that resonates with me. And then, like I said, I say drifting because people say, well, it's your dreams. And even I can say, well, was I dreaming? was it just a dream, like a dump, like a daily dump of, you know, things? Or am I actually experiencing walking through different dimensions and visiting people and places that I have either been before or I'll be later, or spirit communication? It's really hard to sort of just take everything and divide it out. Like I said, it's a puzzle, and that I'm always still trying to figure out. The Sasquatch people have started teaching me how to be a little bit more calm and patient, because they'll give me something really cool and like a really awesome drift where I can see him and I can, well, now it's become more than just Daru. Now I'm meeting members of his family, which he has a brother and a sister and then his father. So I am meeting members of the family now, and I get like a glimpse here and there. And then I'll go up to the area where they are, because I'm not seeing them in real life. I'm seeing physical footprints and, like I said, structures, but fingerprints and stuff like that. And then I'm seeing them in my dreams, and I feel like I'm being spoon-fed, so they don't scare the holy moly out of me when I do meet them. But, you know, it's just, it's starting to become more than just dreams and drifting, and I think that they're helping guide me to other spirits. So the one person that I was talking about, who I see her son a lot, his name is Ryan. I want to say his name out loud because it's important to keep our loved ones' names alive even when they have moved on over. So when I see Ryan sometimes, it's because I followed footprints. Like, I'm like, oh, that looks like a Sasquatch footprint. I want to get my casting material. I want to do that. And then I start walking. I'm like, here's another one. Here's another one. And then there's Ryan standing there. Or there's his mom standing there looking like a goddess with butterfly, or she had hummingbirds like flying around her head like a halo. And each hummingbird was a different color. And she had one on perched on her finger that was blue. And I could tell that each size of the hummingbird was maybe her grown son and daughter, and then the grandchildren. And then she was smiling and she had one on her finger. And I was led there to that place by Sasquatch footprints. So it's really interesting how it might be connected. I know for me that in my dreams it's connected. So I like I said, I follow these Bigfoot prints, and then all of a sudden I'm having spirit communication.
Well, in your dreams, whenever your mind goes, it's calm. You're in like a meditate. That's why through meditation people receive messages, stuff like that. I have dreams that are usually, if I have a dream, I remember it, and it wakes me up, something emotional, it happens within 2 weeks. So that's a great place for these higher consciousness levels to reach you when your mind is in a certain state of sleep. It's the most perfect way to reach people, actually.
That is amazing that you just said that. After all of these experiences and always trying to pick things apart, people talk to me about meditation and really just closing off your mind, and then you'll have this experience. Like my friend Donald, he says, if I can close my mind for a little while, sometimes it takes me about a half an hour and I'm like straight up meditating, and then I'll have this experience. That makes 100% all of the sense that my strongest communications are when I'm sleeping, because I'm just kind of, it's subconscious, and I'm just laying there sleeping, because I'm a busy body. I talk a lot. I'm very busy. I don't shut my mind down during the day. Usually someone suggests a nap to me and I'm like, take a nap. I'm like, ruin my whole day. I have things to do. So that makes a lot of sense.
I can meditate. Yeah. The only way I can do any type of meditation is if I'm outdoors, out in the wilderness, where I'm grounded. I can't do it indoors. I can't. my mind won't shut down long enough. So I know exactly where you're coming from on that.
Well, you're also a fellow Gemini, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
I think our minds flit about often during the day.
That's very true. Very, very true. But, yeah, the whole dream state, that's where, and it's like lucid dreaming. You can learn to control your dreams through lucid dreaming. There's a lot of exercises you can do. So that way you know you're in the dream state. Now, whenever you're in these dream states, do you know that you're dreaming? Can you control it?
So this is something that I was just talking about is sometimes when I am in this situation in my, whether it's drifting or what's happening to me, I'm trying to think to myself, what is going on here? And I'm trying to have more control over what I'm doing, like having a conversation or looking down at somebody's shoes, like, where am I at? Or pretty easily to me. And I know exactly what's going on. And I'm like, hey, I'm having a conversation with somebody that passed on a couple of years ago. This is a great conversation. Or it could be sad or, you know, whatever. But I'm having these interactions and I'm like, I'm trying to control it. My daughter's 17 and she's been having these spirit interactions since she was really little, but it sounds to me like, and she can also see with her eyes open, like when she's awake and she's hanging out in her bedroom, she can see. And I asked her one day, I said, do the spirits look like, you know, are they, can you see right through them or what's going on? And she's like, no, it looks like, whoa, you're not supposed to be here. Who are you? And she has these experiences. Well, my children's father, my former husband, he passed away a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And it has been an incredibly heart-wrenching, sad ordeal. This home has been in despair for weeks. And the kids are really each having different experiences emotionally. But my 17-year-old daughter came downstairs the other day and she said she was in tears and she was like, I had a full conversation and whole situation with Dad last night. And I was like, what? So I talked to her about it and she said, and this is really interesting to me as far as, you know, dimensions go and like controlling things and lucid dreaming, is she said her Papa Rod, who is alive, Papa came and said, you have one more day to be with your dad. And then he has to die again. And then she said the next thing, she was sitting on a couch, which she recognized as her grandma that has passed over years ago, her dad's grandma, sitting on her couch. And she said, the windows outside, if you looked out the windows, it was all black, but it was her apartment. And she said they were sitting there together and she told him all about her trip that she just took to Seattle because she's going to be 18 soon. She's like trying to find the place where she's going to plant her feet. And she was sitting there having a conversation with him and he was smiling and listening and he told her some things that she doesn't really remember, but what interests me mostly, and then he hugged her and said, I love you and I have to go now. I have to go again now. I'm going to try not to cry about this, but what's interesting to me is that she seemed to have so much control having a whole conversation. And for me, I think it comes in waves. Maybe it depends on who's there and who I have these conversations with, or maybe it depends on whether I had a couple glasses of wine before I went to bed. These are things I'm still trying to figure out and how to control this dreaming or drifting or whatever is happening, because I want to have more say-so about what's happening. If I'm moving to another dimension and I'm talking to somebody that I want to talk to, I want to be able to, you know, control my conversation.
I used to work with, before she passed away there, Angelia Shear, and she had went to the Monroe Institute. She was there for like 12 years. And, of course, they teach you all kinds of stuff there at the Monroe. And she told me for lucid dreaming, this is what you could do. So that she was always on to me because I never kept the dream journal. And she'd get mad at me. She's like, you bonehead, write it down. And, of course, I never did. But she told me what she did so she could control her dreams. If she would keep a string tied on her finger or something that was she would recognize, and you look at it several times during the day. Then when you go to sleep and you're in your dream state, you look to see if that's there, and if it's not there, then you know you're dreaming, and then you can control it, if that makes any sense.
That's interesting. I might have to try that as an experiment because I sometimes look down at myself or I look at myself in the mirror and I look like me, but I have bleach blonde hair and it's up in a certain style and I'm definitely in like the 40s era. Or I'll look down at my feet. I had a dream. And I think I was looking out of somebody else's eyes again, though, because I saw a whole murder happen. I was sitting in this van. I was looking out the windshield. I watched this man shoot another man. And then it was over like fish, like stolen fish. Somebody had gotten a whole shipload or a shipment of tuna. And it was this older man had some people working for him. And I'm sitting here watching this whole thing. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I'm watching and I'm scared. And I'm like, I don't want to be around this guy. But they had hired me, and then I go into this restaurant, and I know in the restaurant I met this older man. He was like the Godfather type, you know, like an older Italian guy with white hair, and the way that he talked, I was, you know, he's like all happy and jolly that his order of shipment of tuna came in. And then as I'm in, he's looking at me like, don't you say a word. Like, it was just terrifying. And then I'm walking down the stairs, leaving this place, the ocean on my left, and then I look down, and I'm looking at, you know, I'm in the 1970s wearing this outfit. I don't know. So it's hard to look at myself in these situations because I don't know who I'm looking at sometimes. But the string thing, it sounds like something that would be a good experiment.
Well, it certainly would, and, you know, it's just kind of interesting to talk about this stuff. We don't have very long left, so what I'd like to do is I'd like to give Matt the last question for you, and then we'll do the quick wrap-up of what we're up to and what we're doing, and we'll be out of here in time for Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero, the number one paranormal podcast in the world, which we proceed, and it's a lot of fun being part of this great network. Scarycast is the first internet partner for Ground Zero, and we're very proud of that. So, Matt, ask our wonderful guest a last question, kind sir.
All right. Tell us about tell the people about what your whole Eat Like Sasquatch, what you're trying to do there. And
okay. Cool. So a couple years ago, I was invited to attend Beachfoot. It's Todd Neese's event, and he has a few people that coordinate speaker events and stuff. And I was asked to speak last year at Beachfoot. So I put together a little presentation, mostly about survival foraging in the Pacific Northwest, because this is my area of expertise. And so I put together a presentation, and I entitled it Eat Like a Sasquatch, An Introduction to Foraging in the Forests of the Pacific Northwest with Casey Miller. And from that, my daughter had a dream. And she drew me a piece of artwork. It's a Sasquatch man that looks just like the man that I've seen many times in my trips, Daru. And she did a wonderful piece of art. She's a really talented artist. She did that for me. And then we entitled it. She said, "I saw this in my dreams and I thought you should have it." And I entitled it Eat Like a Sasquatch, Foraged Foods and Infusions. So I'm taking my love and knowledge of the forest and I'm turning it into my own little slice of heaven, doing what I love to do best, being out in the wilderness, collecting foods from the forest, being around my Sasquatch friends. And so I collect herbs and roots and mostly medicinal mushrooms, and I make all kinds of stuff, probiotic sodas with turkey tail mushrooms, and all the fun stuff that I find out there that I used to pay $1 million at the health food store for and started doing it all myself.
Well,
so,
this is Dr. John. I'd like to ask you a question. Are these recipes that you have available, or are they products that you have available?
That's a really great question, actually. These are going to be products that I will have available. Right now I've created a label, and I've been bottling some things and sort of just handing them out as samples while I sort of make myself a business plan. And at some point I'll be selling them. But the ingredients are on there, of course. And then I can always be of a help to people that would like to learn how to do this stuff themselves, because I think it's really important. People are on this health food wave, and I'm a cancer survivor, so it's important for me to make available resources for people that choose to do natural healing. I would love to be a part of that, and sharing my recipes is something that I do. So, of course, I want to build a life out of it, but also I'm a people lover, and I'm all about the natural healing. So, yeah, I'm more than happy to share.
Wow, that's great. Well, look, thanks so much for being with us tonight. We've enjoyed having you. We got just a couple minutes before Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero. So first of all, I would like to say, Casey Miller, we appreciate you. We'd love to have you back. Would you like to come back?
I would love to come back. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Hey, maybe Donald can come back with me, and he can tell you a little bit more about his experiences.
Sure, that would be great. And Matt Delf, you've been a wonderful and able co-host, and you've got this wonderful guest tonight, so we've got to say thank you so much for being an integral part of ScaryCast.
Well, thank you.
Thanks,
you
Matt.
Welcome.
Really appreciate you inviting me.
And wanted to say to everybody, it was a lot of fun. We'll be back next week. We got another great guest lined up. I'm trying to get this one lined up. So we're going to have a great time. And in the middle of February, we got Ryan Tremblay, who's going to be coming back. He is a monster cool guy, Matt. And you know, you introduced me to Ryan, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I like him.
He's great. We have a usual time that we get together and talk a couple of times a week about paranormal stuff, and it's a lot of fun. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being on ScaryCast, the ScaryCast Network, the number one paranormal network.com, and stay tuned. Go back to ScaryCast and click so that you can listen to Clyde Lewis. I can't believe it's calling Clyde Love. But Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero on number one paranormal network, the one and only ScaryCast. Talk to you soon. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Everybody say goodbye.
All right. Bye. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks a lot.